Well, good day, everybody. Welcome to another absolutely amazing interview here at Reverse Heart Disease Naturally Summit. This is Joel Kahn, cardiologist. You know that. And hopefully you have been excited by all the interviews we're doing. But today, hold on, buckle up, put your seatbelt on. It's a good one. You're going to meet somebody that if you're in Detroit, where I am, you know very well. And if you're somewhere else in the world, you may not know until right now. So without further ado, my dear friend, fellow Detroiter, Paul Chatlin. Good day, Paul.
Good morning. Good morning to all. And hello, my dear friend, Dr. Joel Kahn.
And I'll just point out, people will be watching this in Singapore, in Australia, and it might be middle of the night for them. But we'll say good day to all because of the international reach that the idea of reversing heart disease naturally has. It's an international science base, and certainly it's unfortunately an international disease, heart disease. So you and I are approaching almost a decade of collegiality, friendship, and a working relationship. We'll talk about that. That started early 2014. Why don't you tell us that story? Let me just say as a disclaimer, Paul is amazing. You really want to watch every second of this interview, but there's no MD after his name. There's no PhD. Paul is the real deal. Paul's why we're having this summit, and thousands and potentially millions of people like Paul who have the courage to believe that you can stabilize and reverse heart disease naturally. So Paul called me in January 2014. And Paul, bring us up. What was your life like summer of 2013 and what started to happen?
Well, I was basically, you know, waking up one day with severe chest pressure, and it continued for about 2-3 months. It would happen in the morning, during the day, not too often, and come back at night. And it just would continue and continue. And then one day I was at a meeting, and I left the meeting, and I could not take 7 steps without just stopping. And I was cold sweats. And I knew right then I needed to go seek a doctor. I should have done it months earlier, but like most silly people like me, I thought it would just go away. I didn't know much about it back then, and it didn't go away. It actually got worse. So I finally decided to go to my general doctor, and what he discovered was a heart murmur he had not heard before.
So you were about 53, 54.
Yeah.
I thought. And you had a doctor, but you also had what, a pretty scary family history of heart disease. You knew that this was out there in your genes, potentially your genes.
Yeah, my dad and his 3 brothers all had bypass surgery in their 50s. Two of them never made it off the table. One of them, who was my absolute favorite, was never the same mentally. And my dad, who did get through it, was in pain for, you know, 4 or 5 days and saw him cry. I'd never seen him cry before. So that's the memory I have as a young man in my family.
And I don't want to go off on a tangent, but at age 53, 54, you had a primary care doc. You had this fairly, you know, scary family history. You were aware, if I recall, your cholesterol was pretty darn high at that point.
Well, back then you had 3 basic medications, Zocor, Lipitor, and Pravastatin. So I tried the Zocor, but got the side effects of it. Literally couldn't walk one day. So after a couple of days of being off it, everything was fine. They put me on Lipitor. 6 months into Lipitor, same situation. So they put me on 80 milligrams of Pravastatin. And the best they could do is take my cholesterol from a number of 350 down to 280. But at that point, back those years ago, my doctor was like, okay, well, that's about as good as we're going to get. Yeah. And that's where I stood for the next 20 years or so.
And I hate to say this, we're going to have some other exciting summit interviews on the advanced ability to detect heart disease, even when you're asymptomatic using CT scanning. We're going to be talking to Dr. Matthew Budoff from UCLA and Dr. James Min in New York. But you had not had a heart calcium CT scan when you turned 50. It's just not part of the standard medical program. I'm not blaming your doctor, but you had not had anything like that.
No, not at all. Which
could have detected, you know, a couple years before this period of, yeah, what as a cardiologist you're having is new onset angina pectoris. Angina, Latin word for struggling or choking, and pectoris meaning of the chest. And you know, it's a pretty reliable symptom in a early 50s man with a high cholesterol in the family history that you're clogged up. So what was the next step? You knew you were in trouble. Your primary care doc saw you and you got referred to a cardiologist, I imagine. It wasn't me back then.
Right. I was referred to his suggested cardiologist at the Beaumont Hospital. And I did all the tests up to a heart catheter and heart biopsy. And at the end of those tests, he looked at me and he said, Paul, I've been doing this for 20, 30 years. And I could only, sorry to tell you, you need a heart transplant or a bypass surgery pretty quickly. So he said, but let's you and I schedule a heart catheter. So I scheduled it. In the meantime, on the way home that day, I finally decided I had not told anybody in my family what my situation was, hoping it would go away. I stopped at my wife's office, brought her into the conference room and started describing the struggles I've had for the last 2-3 months. And, when she started crying, her boss walked in. And at that time, he's like, what's going on? And we explained it to him what I was going through. And he said, hold on. And it turned out a couple years prior, he had a procedure done at the Cleveland Clinic. And he happened to know some people. And he actually got me in for an appointment the day before I was going to get my heart catheter at Beaumont.
Wow.
So that's where we did. We drove to the Cleveland Clinic and I went through the same types of tests, but it also included a heart catheter. And that there it was discovered that I did not need a heart transplant, but rather immediate bypass surgery. My right artery was 100% blocked. And my left arteries, a couple of them were like in the 65-70% range. So there I was, all geared up, ready to go for bypass surgery. And it turned out that the doctor that I was assigned, his mentor was Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn in medical school. So as I was headed toward the operation surgery door, he stopped. He said, would you consider a nutrition change? And maybe we don't need to have the surgery today. Joel, I did not know what nutrition was 10 years ago. I knew it was like, hey, eat fruits, eat some vegetables. I had no idea what it meant. But I was up to doing anything to not have the surgery because I saw how it affected my family. So basically I said, I'll do anything. Yes, I'll try the nutrition lifestyle change. He picks up his phone. It's 9:30 at night. He dials Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, who I'd never met before, nor did I ever meet the doctor prior. And he said, hey, I got somebody I want you to talk to. And that was the first time I heard of Dr. Esselstyn and spoke to him. And he said, why don't you go on home and I'll give you a call. And sure enough, the next morning at 8 o'clock, he asked me to read his book, which I did end to end. And the next day I got rid of all my meat, dairy, and oil and went right to Whole Foods at that time. And started my lifestyle change.
Just pause there. I mean, everybody listening, you're hours away from open heart bypass, saw the sternum open, maybe do some work on a heart valve. But Cleveland Clinic's famous for two things. It's famous for the largest volume of heart surgery in the United States. It may be the largest in the world. I'm not sure. 10 times the number of heart operations that they do at my local hospital, which is a big hospital. And it's also famous for Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn, who I had probably met 5 years earlier than this portion of the story, but not 25 years ago. And he wrote a book, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, that I have multiple copies in my office for patients to take home and read and study. About a third of the book are amazing recipes, 150 healthy recipes, and two-thirds of the book is the science of why regions in the world don't know what heart disease is, but in the Western countries in the United States, it's the number one killer of men and women. But here you are hours away, and you get the other Cleveland Clinic message that there's nutritional therapy. And I mean, how difficult was it to get out of the Cleveland Clinic? I mean, you got a surgeon with your name on his schedule in the morning. You got nurses, you got anesthesiologists, preps. Not too many people walk out of the Cleveland Clinic 12 hours before open heart surgery. I mean, your own mental state and everybody around you. I bring this up because it's hard to be a maverick. It's hard to choose the other path, even if science says there is another path, because conventional medicine is going to push you towards surgery, angioplasty, stenting, valve replacement, transplant. So how difficult was that whole process, even before you got on the phone with Dr. Esselstyn the next morning?
I was just on uncharted water. I mean, I
you didn't have a buddy taking you through this.
I didn't have Dr. Joel Kahn right by my side. I was just, I went in with the idea that, because here I was, I remember like telling myself as they're wheeling me in, just wake up from the bypass. That's what I was thinking. Like, just whatever you do, just wake up. That was my thoughts before as I was being wheeled in for what I thought was surgery. And then I kept saying, God, you know, like we do this in our lives, like, God, if you get me out of this one, I'll owe you a big one. And sure enough, within like 2 minutes, my doctor's looking at me going, well, I've only offered this to one other person in 20 years. Would you consider a lifestyle change? And I'm like, I'll do anything. I'll do whatever you want. So yeah, it
You're
was
at a vulnerable, desperate, open point in your life. And obviously, Dr. Hanna at the Cleveland Clinic is a respected and senior doctor. So you weren't hearing this from a ragtag magazine that you could reverse your heart disease. You heard it from the man. Wow. So you actually drove home that night?
Yeah, we finished the 4-hour rest after the catheter. And about 12 o'clock at night, my wife says, either we get a hotel room or we'll just drive home. And I really wanted to sleep in my own bed. So I was like, let's go home. So I got home by 3 o'clock, and wow, sure enough, the next morning, Dr. Esselstyn calls me at 8 o'clock.
Now we're going to hear and learn from the great Dr. Esselstyn during this Reverse Your Heart Disease Naturally Summit. Very grateful for that, for all of his work. So we'll get the details of a whole food, plant-based, no oil, no added sugar, alcohol, caffeine, healthy heart diet. Let's emphasize the positive. There are some things you take away, but there's lots of things you probably weren't eating. Gigantic salads and steamed kale before the Cleveland Clinic visit, I imagine.
Well, I like salad, but I would always have it with the dressings that, you know, were not good for me.
Yeah,
So now it's, you know, quite a change in my life.
So you're home, you have a phone call with Dr. Esselstyn, you look at your pantry, you look at your refrigerator, your freezer, and you've got his book to be a guide, which is a wonderful book. And at the time, you know, one of the maybe 3 or 4 out there that really could guide patients. And I mean, what'd you do in your own home? Because people listening that are considering nutritional change for various reasons, they have to do the same thing. What'd you do?
Well, I mean, first, my wife and I agreed that, you know, like as much as I would have and would love to have it, her journey, it was truly just my journey. And I'm thankful that we're still in love, and we respect each other's space. So we kind of sectioned off half the pantry for me, half the pantry for her. And wow, she went with me to Whole Foods, and we started a label read. Wow. Because I just couldn't believe all the foods I was eating that I thought were healthy that had oil in it. So it was just
Six weeks after this, what was your typical breakfast? You already got a little experience doing this stuff. The pantry's different. The refrigerator's different. Right.
You become a pro
in reading labels.
Yeah. Right. It's the same breakfast I have today. It's, you know, either it's going to be a steamed kale, Swiss chard, arugula. It could be a fresh salad if I feel like it with balsamics, or it could be oatmeal with some fruit. And whatever I don't have in the morning, I usually have later in the, late morning or early afternoon.
And then what would be a typical dinner you'd eat? And how
Again, I could go back to either one of those, having a salad again. I try to now have, 4 or 5 steam-type lettuces a day or salads. But I would also have whole wheat noodles or beans with vegetables. So, from a person who grew up as a true foodie, where everything was built around breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and the people I hung out with and the massive amounts of food I ate, part of that lifestyle change is really saying to yourself, you got to eat to survive, but food can't be the highlight of your day any longer.
It's a therapy for you. It was a life altering, life saving therapy. And you got real good at this. I mean, you were really, and still are, legendary as a disciple of a very famous doctor and a food therapy doctor, a reverse your heart disease doctor. So how many months did it take that you were back to either your baseline activity or actually starting to do more and noticing that you no longer had angina distress? How quickly was that process?
Well, the angina actually went away in about 2 weeks.
Wow.
But I also had an enlarged heart, leaky valves, sarcoidosis, the right side of the aorta, left bundle block, heart murmur, along with the full blockage of the right artery. So they really had me on bed rest for the first 60 days, where they had me basically sleeping 16 hours a day to help shrink the heart, and the valves would not have to be leaking as bad, or would, saved. So it took me about 60 days to start feeling like a human, about 90 to kind of get to where I was before. But during that period of time, I probably dropped about 40, 50 pounds. So it was a different person.
Wow. So about 3 months into this, you could walk stairs, do your work, because you did, you know, you were employed, you had your own business in communications. And when did you actually add in riding a bike, walking, doing some weights, which of course you've been very dedicated to now for, you know, the decade, but when were you able to actually up your game to maybe a higher level of fitness than before?
Well, you know, it was a process. You know, I mean, after about 90 days, I started walking, and, you know, every week I would walk a little further, and then kind of got into walking and then did yoga for a while, and then realized that I had a love affair of bike riding. So I incorporated that, always doing 3-4 workouts of lightweight lifting, you know, throughout my life. So, you know, probably within, you know, 120, 150 days, I started working my way up. But, you know, I just now, because I'm a little bit older, I'm not reaching any kind of great milestones with, you know, hundreds of miles of biking or running or walking. I just try to give myself a good hour every day of activity.
And, you know, as we record this, thank God, let's shift from your own personal health to what you did with your passion for education and others in a minute. But thank God, you know, you've still, to this point, you've had no bypass, you've had no stent. You are on, as you honestly told us, some medication for your cholesterol, because there are genetic inputs that even steamed kale and balsamic doesn't lower everybody's cholesterol to the point we need to lower it. So you're on medication, and you know, you've inspired many. But let's talk about that inspired. What was the negotiation you had with your maker, your creator, your spiritual lead that you wanted to give back if you got through this and recovered, which you have? And that led to our meeting in early 2014. I mean, what was that mental mind frame?
Well, it was just the promise I made on the gurney, which was, you get me out of this situation, I'll give back. I didn't know what I was going to do. But here I was getting out of the situation. And my first thing I realized was I couldn't cook. I was having to make all these changes with what I eat, and I had no idea how to cook. I was just not a cook. So I went to the Esselstyn's cooking class, half day class. I think back then it was like $600-$700. So I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll expense it to Blue Cross Blue Shield, and they'll reimburse me, because why would they want to pay me $700 instead of $125,000 for the bypass surgery? And I got denied. I said, oh, that's my give back. I'm going to work my way up the Blue Cross Blue Shield hierarchy and get somebody to give me a pay code so other people could, you know, go to a cooking class and get reimbursed. So I took like about 2 months, got up to the highest level at Blue Cross Blue Shield, which they denied me and said the reason why is that I have to work with the Michigan legislature to get that approved and passed. And I realized that is something I just did not want to do. So instead, I took a $20 ad in the local paper, just on a flyer. And I said, hey, I said I was scheduled for bypass surgery. I was able to stop, hopefully someday reverse it. And I did not have the surgery, but rather I'm feeling great. If people want to understand a plant-based diet, the first 20 people, I'm inviting you to my house. It was a real simple ad in the paper. Within 2 days, I had 20 people signed up. So I brought them over to my house, never met these people in my life. And each one of them had a heart disease issue. And, you know, me not being a doctor, but, you know, having starting to go deep read in a lot of these areas, I just told my story. I gave some drops of knowledge, not much, but a little bit. I opened up my pantries and showed them the cooking stuff I'm using and said goodbye to them. But it was gnawing at me. So I said, well, I'll do it one more time. So I did it again. Within a couple of days, again, another 20 people showed up. And I thought, wow, this is my give back. But I started realizing that these people are asking me a lot of science questions, and I'm not a doctor. So I called the heads of 3 hospitals, local hospitals here in Michigan. And I said, do you have interventional cardiologists? You give me 3 names. Each one of them gave me 3 names. But the one name that was repeated was Dr. Joel Kahn. Now, I had never heard of Dr. Kahn, nor have I ever met Dr. Kahn. But I thought, well, since they're repeating his name 3 times, I'm going to introduce myself to him first. So there I was. I gave you a call. You said, come on over. So I remember that day like it was yesterday. You brought me into your house, your kitchen. I got to meet your family. We spent 4 hours talking. And I walked out. I said, I'm not calling anybody else. This is my guy. This is the guy I want. Because, you know, and And Joel, you know, I could just say on just a personal level, you know, 10 years later, I look at you. Yes, you're my cardiologist. You know, yes, you've never said no when it had to do with the organization called the Plant-Based Nutrition Support Group, but you are my brother. You've been there for me for 10 straight years. Thank you.
Well, and I will say, and thank you for that. Of course, your kindness is abundant, but you weren't actually coming to my house to interview me to be your cardiologist. You were coming to my house to interview me to start up an organization to really educate on the power of nutrition as a disease stabilization, disease reversal tool, because there was no community. We're in Detroit area, but anybody listening anywhere, where's your meetup group to help support those that are taking heart disease reversal seriously and using nutrition as their platform? It's very rare to find one. There's a few more now than there were a decade ago, but in Detroit, there were none, essentially. And you were the pioneer. And, you know, we did the same thing. We put a little ad. We got a room at my hospital that held about 80 people. And you know the numbers, way more than 80 showed up, right?
123.
Okay. And we did it again. And that was in the middle of a February snowstorm. It was a bad night. People showed up and we did it again the next month. And there were more, you remember.
We had 141.
Okay. And this was early 2014. And then the hospital called. And the hospital called and said, a hospital I'd been on staff at that point 20 years and had brought in, you know, unbelievable amount of business to the hospital. You know, we don't approve of what you're doing. They told us we were violating the fire code laws because we had more people in the room than the heart auditorium held. If you can imagine, we were able to pack out the heart auditorium talking about steam kale. And they also wanted to be clear that they had not approved the nutritional program through their own dietetics division. And it was some experimental program they needed to review. So by that point, we had an organization and you named it Plant-Based Nutrition Support Group, or we all say PBNSG.org. Everybody go to that URL, PBNSG.org. It's a vibrant, vibrant, active, up-to-date organization and website. And we moved to a high school auditorium. And just give the audience for a couple minutes, you know, it's been now, you know, many years in the making, and we've shifted to more virtual meetings because of just the way the world has gone. But, you know, what you built for an educational platform that did not exist and really has expanded worldwide. But go for it. Explain.
All right. So the funny part about that story was they called us to say that we couldn't go to the Beaumont auditorium 3 days before our third meeting. So I remember I was scrambling. I was calling churches, synagogues, and it's the Birmingham school system that opened up both high schools for our activities. And we've been loyal to them ever since. And that continued on. So what we were doing as an organization, most importantly, is it was a place for people with heart disease to come meet each other and listen to great speakers like yourself and others talk about heart health. That was the beginning of the Plant-Based Nutrition Support Group. So each month we'd have an activity. And then we started to expand and having culinary events. And then we had a moment where we were deciding, or I was deciding, do I go into animal rights or the planet, or maybe expand it to diabetes, obesity, some other modalities? And that's the direction we went into. So we expanded maybe 3-4 years into it in that area. So today, we have about 11,000 members worldwide. It's growing. We have a membership platform. Back then, we would bring in a speaker event, a culinary event. And then I came up with the idea of what we called small groups. And they were little small community groups. We had 54 at the peak that were in Michigan. We were starting to expand nationally, where somebody in a given city could open up their doors and their heart to their neighbors that had health issues. And like I said, it was going great. And then unfortunately, we got COVID. And as soon as COVID hit a few years ago, back in February, because most of our members were probably 60 and older, we had to put a hard stop to the organization, do a complete turnaround. And the question was, well, do we just stop it? Because everyone loved the live meetings. We'd have meetings that would have 500 to 1,000 people at times, depending on who was there. We'd have culinary events in the hundreds. Or we went virtual. So we made the decision to go virtual. And today we are a virtual organization. which again, you could reach us at www.pbnsg.org. And today we offer the same types of events, multiple monthly speaker events, multiple culinary events. We have what they call specialized support groups. So if you have diabetes, obesity, if you're an athlete, a single parent, we have a lot of different specialized groups that you could be with other like-minded people. And then we have ad hoc, a variety of different activities. Plus, we've just instituted health coaching. So that's who we are today. It's growing. I mean, the important thing is people know how to use the Zoom.
And I think, plant-based nutrition, but the last two words, support group. Because, there's a brother-in-law, there's an employer, there's a spouse, there's children, there's the medical community. Probably the toughest deal is you make a lifestyle change and you ask questions and your own doctor pushes back, says you're making a mistake, suggests you add back lamb or fish, and you've done the science and you've read the work. So the support group aspect, one of the pioneers that certainly, and we're going to have a wonderful interview with Dr. Dean Ornish, MD, who way back in the 80s, a component of his heart disease reversal program was community and support. And now with the Blue Zones Project, we'll be having a wonderful session with Dan Buettner and learning about the community aspects of longevity that he has studied and made so famous. But, you brought Detroit and now digitally you've brought the world a community, a support group. So you don't have to walk alone. There is an African statement. If you want to walk fast, walk alone. If you want to walk far, walk with somebody else, because this is a lifelong plan. We pride ourselves. I know we don't have many people dropping off and going back to a Paleolithic, ketogenic, meat heavy diet. They have been so impressed by your story, the weight loss stories, the diabetes reversal stories, the psoriasis stories, the just fulfillment of life. I mean, it doesn't always have to be something you measure on a scale. It can just be that you're part of a movement that also happens to benefit the environment and is kind to animals. And we've talked about all of that over the last decade of PBNSG. So it's exciting. And, you've sort of got a legacy. I mean, there's not enough groups around the United States. There's a vibrant group in Rochester. There's a group in Chicago, but under different names. We've all heard now that the founder and CEO of Whole Foods, John Mackey, who I know is a close friend of yours and ally of mine, is planning a national program that sort of is tangential to what you did a decade ago. And I think you influenced so many people. I mean, you get a lot of credit, not just your own personal health, but showed people that you can be, you can go upstream and succeed against hospital pressures and pandemic pressures and a medical community that still doesn't celebrate plant-based nutrition and teach it the way it should. But, last topic, just tell us about the curriculum, because we all know the future would be zip forward 20 years and doctors and nurses and physical therapists and dentists and dietitians bring up plant-based nutrition as the first tool in the toolbox. And that's going to take education in the school. So tell us what you've done with the largest medical school in the United States, which is in Detroit, Wayne State University. A long battle, but share us with it and the end of that story being a success.
Right. Let me just add before I get it, and I will answer that. You're right. I've been able to help other cities start a group because I've got a manuscript that I wrote of how to get things started in your own community. They've done spinoffs of it in other cities. So I'm honored that they copied a lot of things that I developed early. One of the things that was interesting was we had all of our speakers that would come into town. They all spoke at Wayne State Medical School and in the morning before they come out to PBNSG that evening. And there became a nice group of young doctors, that were committed to learning more about nutrition as it would affect people's health and their patients' health. And Amanda Martin was the first person I connected with. And she was a very strong-willed lady, a brilliant lady. And, she worked with the people in the curriculum. And then, this didn't happen overnight. This took years upon years. We had Robin Benami. We had other people kind of leading the charge. And that continued for about 5-6 years. And finally, Lucky Malproy was my contact, and he got them to approve a curriculum. And this wasn't a curriculum. Basically, what they said to us is, you create an add-on curriculum for us, and we believe we can get it into our curriculum. So we took 14
medical school, formal medical school curriculum incorporating plant-based disease reversal education, which is radical.
Right. And so we took 14 students from five different medical schools, worked on it for 14 months. Like every month, we have an hour or two session. PBNSG was sponsoring the whole, all the activity. When we initially presented, it was in curriculum form, they turned us down. And then we had to break it up into the nine systems of the body, which we did, and then they accepted it. So today, first and second year medical students are learning six items of nutrition that go across the nine systems of the body for healing health. And it goes with the idea that I've been saying for 10 years, it should always be nutrition before pills or procedures. And I hope the day comes where doctors look at that as the lead.
And again, in one of my books, I have the quote by the famous physician Rabbi Maimonides, no disease should be treated with medication before nutrition. And here we are still struggling, 1,000 years later to make that a reality. But you may have had the biggest impact, on the largest medical school. And, it will take time. We all wanted it to happen 5 years ago, 8 years ago. I'm sure if you speak to Dr. Esselstyn, Dr. Ornish, Dr. Furman, Dr. Bernard, they wanted it to happen 25 years ago. But you're the man. You did it. And I think the entire world thanks you for it. So we'll shut this down. And everybody, I just want to say again, you don't have to live in Detroit to use the resources and become a member of pbnsg.org. The recipe section, the education section, the video file. And it's active. There's new events every month. So check that out and support it. Paul didn't ask me to say this, but one of you listening is just sitting on a big donor fund and you want to fund a little bit of pbnsg.org. That's certainly been a struggle over the years. And we would we'll rename the whole organization after you.
We will. I'll right now. We'll call it your name. But that is... It's amazing with all the people we've touched, Joel. I mean, and it's been tens of thousands. I'm just getting by month to month. I understand. And that's okay. I mean, the fact is we're still around when other organizations have failed. But boy, if I could ever get a donation big enough, I could, oh my God, I could save a lot more lives. Right. It could help.
We'll leave it there on that hope and aspiration and the fact you haven't lost any of your ability to dream big and wish you well. And
thank you.
Your contribution to this summit, because we're going to talk about the science of disease reversal, but this has been amazing and wonderful. And thank you. And we'll catch up soon.
Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.